Republicans have long promised to repeal Obamacare. This week we got our first glimpse at what a replacement plan would look like. We'll talk about what that means for Wisconsin. Meanwhile, lawmakers are back to work in Madison, where decisions on the state budget and roads funding loom large. Last year, four people died in the county jail in Milwaukee. Now there's the prospect of criminal charges in one case. We'll talk about that and look at how Sheriff David Clark's response compares to that of other sheriffs. All of that, plus winners and losers from Wisconsin's best political team on today's edition of JS on Politics. Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Greg Borowski, and we're going to start today right at the top, which means the view of what's happening in Washington, specifically on health care, and that's what this first segment's all about. We're joined now by Ray Locker from the USA Today Washington Bureau. We're fortunate to have him join us to talk about Obamacare and its replacement, Trump care, GOP care, whatever it will be termed. But Ray, let's talk a little bit about the rollout of this. So Republicans for years have been voting to replace Obamacare and get rid of it. Now they get one chance at their first impression to roll out their new plan. How has it been going in the first few days? What's the initial assessment out there of this?
Well, the initial assessment is it's good if you make a lot of money. It's bad if you don't make money and are on Medicaid. A lot of people are going to lose their benefits. One of the things that the president said during the campaign and lately is that it's going to be cheaper, it's going to be better, everybody's going to be covered. But that's not what's happened so far with this bill. What the Republican leadership has said is this gives people access to health care, but not necessarily health care itself. Which means if you have the money, you can find the money to pay for a plan under this plan, you're going to have health care. If not, you're probably going to be out of luck. And there's been a lot of reaction against that. Now, on the conservative side, Republicans have said, some conservative Republicans like the House Freedom Caucus have said, hey, this preserves many of the elements of the Affordable Care Act, and we don't like that either.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit, if you roll back the clock, Obamacare, when it was presented, it had, you know, challenges to get it through. Even further back, Hillary Clinton, when she was working on health care under Bill Clinton, this is a complicated area to make work and make everybody happy. I mean, how would you compare the initial reaction to this plan versus some of the challenges in the past and how, you know, troublesome it may be to get this approved?
Well, the issue this time, in comparison to the other times, is that all the Republicans say they want to get rid of the existing law. But what they don't want to do is get rid of existing health care for people who have it. So they're trying to split the difference, and that's extremely difficult. The fundamental problem for everybody, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, is paying for it. Everybody wants health care. They don't want to pay for it. That was one of the huge problems with the Affordable Care Act is raising taxes to have people who make more money pay a greater share to help people who don't have money get their health care. A lot of people don't like doing that, and that's quite understandable. Now, this time around, if you want to preserve all the things about the Affordable Care Act that people say they like preserving your children on your health insurance until they turn 26, you have to find a way to pay for it, and this plan doesn't necessarily do that.
Yeah, so at this stage, would you assess it to have a bigger challenge on the policy side in terms of the format and framework of the bill, or just the politics side in that, you know, you need to get this divergent Republican caucus to get behind one plan, not just one idea of something that they don't like?
Well, I think it's kind of equal on both sides. On the policy side is if you have any kind of subsidies that help people pay for insurance, that's anathema to members of the Freedom Caucus. They don't like that. They consider that government assistance in healthcare, and they want a more free market system. On the politics side, you're going to be taking healthcare away from people who already have it. And that's going to be a nightmare no matter how you phase it in. So you say it's going to kick in 2019. You're still going to have story after story about people who had health insurance who then lost it. And that's not going to be very popular.
All right, and finally, when Obamacare was passed, it was passed with near unanimity from Democrats and opposition from Republicans. Can Republicans, do you think, hope to achieve that here in order to get a plan through, or what's it going to take to get something resolved here in Congress?
Their challenge is in the Senate. Can they get you know, all the Republicans, and they got 52 to vote as a block. And there's a lot of people who are kind of skittish. You know, 2018 is a good year for Senate Republicans. They only have 8 seats to defend. But some of them are in places that are at risk, like Nevada, where Dean Heller's up for reelection. You know, that state has voted Democratic in the last at least 4 presidential elections. So that's going to be a challenge for them. You know, does he stick with it, looking at a tough reelection fight with a lot of people who, you know, are Latino and possibly on Medicaid? Do they stick together? I don't know what the answer is to that.
All right. Well, thanks for the update from Washington on that, and thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're joined now by our panelists for today. Some familiar faces to our viewers, Dan Bice, Watchdog columnist, Bill Glauber, one of our political reporters.
Welcome back.
So let's talk about the impact of the Republican plan here in Wisconsin. Scott Walker was kind of tepid about it.
I think would be an understatement. Yeah. He was tepid about it. He also said something striking. He said, well, you know, Obamacare, it's not going to affect a lot of people. You know, if you have a health care plan through your employer, it won't affect you. But, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of people in this state who get their insurance through the exchanges. So it will affect a lot of people in the state, maybe not you or I who have, you know, health insurance from a company or through a company, but it's going to affect quite a few people here. And how this thing shakes out is very important. And what's not being discussed locally probably is Medicaid. You know, Medicaid just doesn't pay for poor people on health care. It also pays, you know, if grandma has to go into a nursing home, it can help defray those costs there, too. So it's going to affect a lot of people, regardless of what the governor is
saying. So Paul Ryan today, of course, he has a lot at riding in this and at stake. He has out with his charts and pointers explaining how it's going to work. Dan, what's at risk for him if he can't show, once they have the opportunity to pass this, that they can pass it and then it can actually work?
Well, I mean, he has said, I've got the votes to pass it. So he's put that bar up there and he says he's going to get through. But the tougher question is getting it through the Senate, as we were just hearing, because there are a number of tough Senate races in 2 years. I think there are 8 Republican Senate seats that are up, but 23 Democratic seats that are up, including Tammy Baldwin. And the debate over the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, it became a big issue in the Johnson-Feingold race, and I think it'll be another big issue in that race as well. And Baldwin has made it clear that she's going to campaign very much opposed to Trump, and I'm guessing probably in favor of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. But for the Republicans, it's kind of a change in position. When Obamacare went through, they could sit back and just try to bollocks it up or not vote for it and watch the Democrats struggle to get the votes.
And vote to repeal it, as they did repeal it.
Do you think they can get the votes? Can they keep themselves unified enough to get it through?
They need to make changes, obviously. What those changes will be, we don't know, but it's the bill as it stands now is not going to be the version that passes in the Senate. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton was basically telling the House, slow down. I think that's probably what a lot of Republicans in the Senate are saying, and there's 4 sort of moderate, well, 3 moderate senators and 1 very conservative senator who have deep reservations about this bill. They can pass, again, this is procedural, they can pass a repeal and replace on the money side of it with just 50 votes, but then you have some statutory rules, statutory laws that have to be changed, and that you would need 60 votes. So they're not home free by any measure yet. You know, it kind of reminds me of when George W. Bush wanted to privatize Social Security with private accounts. That thing fell apart. I'm not saying this is going to fall apart, but I'm starting to pick up a whiff of real panic.
Well, there are 2 things. One of the major things is that the only thing worse than being in the minority sometimes is being in the majority where you own it and it's their responsibility and they had an agenda and it's their responsibility to try to bring that thing home. And they're getting pressure from people on the far right, the Club for Growth and those groups saying, this is what you campaigned on. But the public has become pretty fickle on this, whereas just a year ago, the public was solidly opposed to Obamacare. Now recent polls are showing that there's a slight majority who favor it.
And Trump Care, let's face it, Trump Care, which is what this is going to be called, apparently is going to hurt many Trump voters who now get the Affordable Care Act. So there's a lot of political calculation going on. And you can't just take the good stuff from Obamacare. You have to take some, you know, otherwise this thing falls apart like a house of cards. And that's what the Republicans have come up against, the reality.
But the problem in slowing down the process is you get closer and closer to the 2018 election with what you're doing. Those who want to rush it through right now would like to see it happen immediately and create some distance between now and then.
And, you know, it's making a star. It's making a star on the Democratic side. Joe Kennedy III has emerged as an impassioned proponent of Obamacare, has taken on Paul Ryan frontally in committee. He's getting a lot of mileage about this. So, you know, it's amazing how the politics change. Yeah. And we could be seeing the rise of a Kennedy again out of this.
Do you remember we talked to Russ Feingold and said to him, when did you know you were going to lose the 2010 race?
Yeah, he knew he was going to lose the 2010 race on Christmas Eve 2009 when he had to vote. Yeah.
All right. Well, there'll be much more to follow on Trump Care or Ryan Care or Trump and Ryan Care, whatever this will be named in the future. Right now, we're going to move it down a notch in the levels of government for this look at what's happening in Madison now that the legislature is back and getting revved up. We're joined now by Jason Stein of our Madison Bureau to talk about what's happening in our state capitol. So, Jason, a few weeks ago, Governor Walker introduced his budget, but not a lot of action on that so far, yet there's a lot happening at the capitol. Give us an update on what's been worked on this week.
Well, after a couple of slow months at the capitol, things are starting to pick up a little bit. This week, the lawmakers passed legislation to make youth counselors or prison guards in juvenile prisons in the state mandatory reporters for child abuse. This follows a lot of reporting by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and my colleague Patrick Marley on alleged abuses at Lincoln Hills, the state's prison for youth north of Wausau. So that legislation is moving forward. There's been a number of other bills, including a couple dealing with patients with difficult health issues. One is a CBD oil bill to make it easier for families that have children with severe seizures to get a product derived from marijuana that some people say can help curb those seizures. There's also a right to try legislation, which makes it easier for terminally ill patients to get access to experimental treatments that might offer them, you know, their final hope at a cure.
All right, let's go back a little bit on the Lincoln Hills measure. That's the first piece of, we presume, other changes in the wake of all of this reporting. But why wouldn't that have been a requirement in the past? It seems obvious, right? If you're in charge of taking care of the inmates and there's someone who's being abused, wouldn't one have generally expected that to be a requirement to report it to authorities?
Well, we certainly require that of teachers and social workers and other people whose jobs routinely bring them into contact with minors, that, you know, it is a requirement that they report instances of abuse and neglect, and can be criminal penalties involved if they fail to do that. The legislature has really been in a holding pattern over Lincoln Hills for the past, more than a year, as they wait for a criminal investigation that is now run by the FBI to finish in that institution. But now they're finally moving forward, you know, in the absence of criminal charges or a definitive end to that investigation. They're starting to move forward, at least with the small steps on that institution.
All right. Another story this week was a report on highway costs, specifically for Interstate 39 in the Madison area, and that was something like 2.5 times more than what lawmakers originally anticipated when it was approved. Well, what is that? It sort of underlines the challenge facing lawmakers. Is there any hope or sign of progress to resolve how to tackle some of these road funding issues?
Right. Well, first, again, the news this week was that the I-3990 project, the widening of that interstate from the Illinois state line up to Madison, has been really substantially underestimated the cost of that, and that is alarming for lawmakers and I think the public in general, given that the state already has a lot of funding challenges in our roads fund. And then to see that, you know, this major project has been, you know, essentially lowballed, is another reminder that the project or that the problem could be even worse than we previously thought. Now, in terms of the challenge at the Capitol, Republicans have not agreed on whether or not to raise gas taxes or vehicle fees or some other form of revenue to help pay for this shortfall that we have in the road fund, you know, in this budget and many years to come. You know, it's still unclear what will happen with that. I mean, I think the most likely scenario seems to be that not that Republicans raise some new form of revenue, but that they take some costs or some revenue that's currently going into schools and healthcare, and that they earmark that for roads going forward.
All right, and that'll be resolved in part, I'm sure, when the state budget does get addressed and acted on. Tell us a little bit briefly what's ahead for that. When do you expect to have some of the first hearings get started?
Sure. Well, Governor Scott Walker introduced his budget bill last month. The first thing that always happens is the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which is sort of our version of a nonpartisan congressional budget office that advises lawmakers of both parties. That budget office had just yesterday released their analysis of Scott Walker's budget. It's a 500 or 600 page document. You know, lawmakers will take a little bit of time and digest that, see what the budget actually does, and then there will be hearings scheduled for the budget committee, the Joint Finance Committee, all around the state. Lawmakers will take input from citizens and special interests about, you know, what's in the budget. And then probably, you know, late April or May, you will see lawmakers start to amend the budget, rewrite it. And then in June, you know, you'll see it go to the floor of both houses. At least that's how it typically works out.
All right. Well, there'll be much more to follow on that in the weeks ahead. So thanks for joining us today, Jason.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk a little bit more about the state budget and what's at stake there. And there's other action in Madison. So, Bill, there is an interesting connection on this right to try legislation with the whole other level of government.
Yeah, right to try has been passed in more than 30 states, but it really doesn't become effective until the feds deal with it. And Ron Johnson, for the last year, has been trying to enact right-to-try legislation in the U.S. Senate. It was blocked by Harry Reid a couple of times. Now Republicans are in power. Mike Pence is on board. Seemingly Donald Trump is on board. So if they can get the federal law passed, then it makes all these state laws applicable.
All right. Now, the last time we were talking about the state budget, Scott Walker was lining it up and trying to, in anticipation of his presidential bid and trying to get it through so he could get out on the campaign trail. Now we've got a whole other election to think about. But
right.
What's at stake for Scott
Walker?
Well,
he wants to forget that election completely.
This is the new budget.
What election?
This is the budget that you push through to set up for your next race in the odd year before the election. And so there are three parts to his budget. One is the welfare to work plan that he's touting. And I think he had said like 15 times in his speech about how he wanted to move as many people as possible from welfare to work. He wants to keep taxes low, which has been a theme for as long as possible with him. And he wants to be seen as pro-education, which has been a weakness of his, but he's putting more money into public schools and more money into higher education, too. And I think it's $42 million he's putting into higher education and going to distribute it based on this performance-based model that he's setting up there. So this is clearly the agenda that he wants to set up. The one thing that isn't front and center in that is the transportation issue, which the Republicans just can't figure out. Just like the Republicans in Washington are struggling on Obamacare, the Republicans here struggle on the transportation funding.
All right. Well, let's continue our journey down the levels of government. We're going to move down to the county level now and talk about the deaths in the Milwaukee County Jail. We're joined now by Jacob Carpenter, who's one of our investigative reporters in the newsroom, and he's been tracking the deaths at the Milwaukee County Jail. So, Jacob, you had a very interesting story, an important one that posted in yesterday, about how there may be some criminal charges afoot in this case, or at least the first indication of what these outside investigators may be looking at.
Yeah, we do. It was part of a motion that was filed the other day in court related to the inquest in the Terrell Thomas dehydration case. And in there, they do say that a potential relevant charge that they would be looking at would be abuse of an inmate. And that is a felony. It is the lowest classification of felony, punishable by up to 3.5 years in prison. But it is the first time that we've seen an indication of who could be charged. Although we don't have names, we do know that it would be jail staff, and what that potential charge that they could be looking at would
be. Right, and the way they would be defining abuse here isn't, say, striking a person. This is like withholding water or
the title of the charge is abuse, but it also would include neglect or, I believe, ill treatment of an inmate.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit more on this issue about a story you've got going that's posting this morning and available on, in print tomorrow, on a survey you did of all the deaths in all the county jails across the state and how those sheriffs have handled those cases. What did you find?
Well, we wondered, with Sheriff Clark in this case, his administration did get an outside investigation into one death at his jail, but not in three other deaths. So we wondered what's typical. And we found that in about 60% of jail deaths that we looked at all across the state over the last 5 years, we found that 60% of them did have an outside investigation, usually with that outside agency coming in right away, a few times with the local agency doing their own investigation, and then asking for a secondary review by an outside agency.
All right, so it shows that here, at least in Milwaukee County, we might be a little bit out of step, but there isn't a lot of uniformity.
No, there is not uniformity for sure, and it's a decision that under state law is strictly up to sheriffs. So there is kind of an all-over-the-map element to this.
Yeah, well, let's lastly talk about, a few years ago, a law came through for people who die in the custody of police officers, so outside of the county jails and other places, and that requires an outside investigation to take place as a mandatory situation. Is there any move afoot to do something similar for deaths once they're in custody in a jail?
Well, the Milwaukee County supervisors, definitely, they've already voted that they want a state law on that front. I did talk to Senator Chris Larson, who's a Democrat from Milwaukee, who said that he's in the early process of looking at and drafting a bill. Nothing has been introduced, and he didn't really have a sense at this point as to whether there'd be an appetite for that, particularly in a Republican legislature. But there is at least some talk of it at this point.
All right. Well, great. Well, thank you very much for that update and for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit more about the county jail. So, Dan, you've been following this for years. These deaths aren't the only problem at the county jail that we've seen.
No, actually, it seems to have started around 2011, 2012. We ran into just a load of problems there. So, and many of those cases are in court. I think there are 12 current federal suits regarding the jail. There was an official there who was doing lap dances for some of the inmates. There was one correctional officer taking pictures of other correctional officers when they're getting dressed. Someone who was stealing money from there. A correctional officer who impregnated an inmate. I mean, those are just the things I can think of off the top of my head. There are many more than that. But it clearly escalated last year to the point where we started having deaths in the jail.
All right. And the person ultimately responsible for the jail, of course, is Sheriff Clark. And he's been a little busy these days, right? Tell us what he's
has.
Up to.
And actually, he brings up the jail on what he's talking about today, which is he is asking the feds to approve an agreement that would allow his staff members, his officers and his deputies, to enforce immigration law in this area. It would be the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office would be the first one in the state to do this. That means they could go out and pick up people, or at the jail, if they find that someone is an undocumented immigrant, they could move to have that person deported.
And he's apparently done this without consulting the board, the county executive. He hasn't released the letter that or the attorneys.
Yeah.
He's basically, as usual, a one-man show. We do know, though, that apparently, based on the picture that emerged yesterday, he was not on the book tour. He was instead in Milwaukee signing this document.
The unfortunate thing is he did sign this agreement, and he took a picture of it from a distance, but we've been told the only way we'll see the document in which he's recommending this that the program be developed We have to get it through an open records request.
We were able to see some of the document yesterday with a blown-up photo and magnifying glass.
But as we know, his office, in my 25 years in the business, is the worst agency in terms of releasing records. So we might see the letter and the proposed agreement sometime in 2018.
Yeah. So on the what has the pushback been on that particular thing on the immigration? There's a lot of opposition
There's a great deal of opposition. The mayor's office is opposed. Chief Flynn has said he won't participate in the program. Voces de la Frontera, the major
immigrant rights group.
Right. They've said they're planning massive resistance and perhaps a major general strikes on May 1st if this program goes into place.
All right. Well, instead of continuing our way down until we get to sewerage district or something on the levels of government, we're going to
school board.
With the time running out, we're going to go to our winners and losers. So, Bill, first, who's your winner of the week?
The Boys and Girls Club of Sherman Park.
We're getting even more local.
Well, but it's a really good organization. It's reopened after 6 months of renovations, and it's a vital resource in a very important neighborhood that is trying to come back from last summer's trouble.
All right, so Dan, I assume your winner is your next door neighbor or something if we're going in that direction.
No, it's UW-Madison. With the governor's plan, there's a professor who evaluated who the winners and losers would be under his performance-based funding increase, and not surprisingly, UW-Madison comes out on top, and UW-Milwaukee and UW-Parkside come out on bottom.
All right, and your loser of the week, Dan.
This one takes a little bit of explanation, but it's Deputy Inspector Kevin Niklavich. With the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. A year ago, he went in to see if he could retire this year, and the pension office said, sure, you can. But now that his retirement date's coming up, they said, well, actually, you have to work another 2.5 years. Obviously, that's not a good thing, but much of the reaction has been to the fact that he's only 52 years old and that he's planning to retire. And he also oversees the jail, which, as we've just heard, has not been run in a stellar way over the last couple of years.
So is this just a garden variety mix-up, or is this tied into all the problems where they are overpaying people and underpaying people? And
I mean, it's a sort of mistake that, unfortunately, we're hearing more and more from the pension office. It's not related to the problems where there were overpayments, but this is just a simple calculation on a person's eligibility, whether you have 75 years of service and your age, if they combine and they miscalculated that.
All right. And Bill, your loser of the week.
Well, we were really struggling because we were thinking public museum, winner or loser, because, they announced $100 million. They want to build a new museum, and they also announced layoffs. So we couldn't figure that one out, but we know one sure loser. The CIA, WikiLeaks released thousands of documents that catalog the agency's cyber spying capabilities. And did you know your Samsung TV, smart TV, could be hacked? You do now.
We might be being hacked by these cameras in the studio for all we know, so we'll be careful on what we're saying the rest of the way. Let's go to our viewer questions. Here's one for, I'm going to get through to you, Dan, from Wondering. He says, because I know you wrote about this, can Jason Ray really make much of a difference on the DNC? Seems like the party is cooked no matter what, given all the Republican redistricting.
But he's on the national DNC level, and that's the important thing. Locally, I think the Democrats are in a bad way right now. But I think it's a good thing for the Wisconsin Democrats that they were able to get someone relatively young. How old is he?
He's 30 years old.
Who's now in one of the most powerful positions in the Democratic Party. We saw what happened with Reince Priebus, who joined the Republican Party and took over the Republican Party during a difficult time, and how he was able to turn that around. So it's always better to have someone local in a powerful position like that than to not have someone.
All right. Bill, let me throw this one to you. This is from Frank on Second Shift. He says, who is running the Milwaukee County Pension Office, and who are the workers that are making so many mistakes? Are the people qualified to allocate such large amounts of money? Isn't it fairly simple math?
No, it's not. Okay. It's not simple math. There's apparently, over the years, they've added so much complexity to the system that it's created these problems. Who's in charge? That's a good question. I'm not so sure anybody knows.
Actually, there's been a great deal of turnover on the staff in recent years, so the people running it now aren't the same people who ran it before.
I used to cover City Hall and the pension situation there, and I remember thinking I should get a finance degree for covering it, because every time they make
you
a
covered
tweak,
that,
you
know, that they, universal
right, yeah,
view,
they make a little
crazy
tweak, and it changes everything for certain people who fall in that category and not those who don't. And
one thing that should be said about the Milwaukee County pension system that should get praise, and that is that they're public about how much someone is getting, a retiree is getting. when they leave office with the state. That's not public. You have to guess, make calculations on your own and figure it out. And you never know if you're actually right or not until someone tells you you're wrong.
Well, do people in the state walk away with $1 million?
They don't, but I mean, the reason we know...
Yeah. You can't tell your exact number, but it's not $1 million. It's a trade-off, right? All right.
But it is true. We know who got a $1.4 million backdrop with a name, and you wouldn't get that anyplace else.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to end the show today, and we'll return to calculating our own retirement in the next couple
of years.
We'll be back next week at the same time. Hope you join us then.